from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll find out how the IMA is celebrating the state's bicentennial.
I'll get a preview of this year's Stutz Artist Open House.
And I'll have a look at the new T.C. Steele exhibit at the Indiana Historical Society's headquarters. And we'll have that arts calendar we call What'll We Do?
All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Nineteen Stars of Indiana Art is the Indianapolis Museum of Art's tribute to our bicentennial. The exhibit will take visitors through 200 years of our state's visual art and present the accomplishments of 19 artists who were born in Indiana, such as T.C. Steele, Robert Indiana, Michael Graves, and Bill Blass, along with many other artists who were raised or worked in Indiana. Sharon Gamble invited Dr. Annette Schlagenhoff, curator of special projects, and Anna Stein, curatorial assistant, to tell us more about this multimedia celebration.
So, Annette, tell me about the conversation where somebody said, well, you know, we have this bicentennial coming. How are we going to celebrate?
Well, celebrate was the key word here. And probably about 2.5 years ago, we all sat down around a table and tried to bat around a few ideas. And a number of people had good ideas. The one that this show will treat is an exhibition that we've called 19 Stars of Indiana Art, based off the concept that our state flag has 19 stars, and we want to turn 19 artists into the stars of Indiana.
Fantastic. So in the process of compiling that list of 19, you probably came up with a lot more, and you had to weed it out.
We did do a lot of weeding,
yeah.
And there were some criterion for that. If you're going to pick 19, you want to have sort of a good depth in each of those.
Mm-hmm.
So some of them, when we compiled a really large list, some of them fell by the wayside because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And others came up. And we knew that we wanted to do it with our permanent collection so that we weren't going to be borrowing things, because our permanent collection is pretty strong. Curators have built that collection, always focusing on the Indiana connection.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a chance to pick some where we had good depth. And then we wanted to make it as diverse as possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, photography, prints and drawings, paintings, fashion arts, all of those areas where Indiana artists or artists with Indiana connections really excelled.
That's a good – I'm glad you rephrased that, because they aren't all necessarily from here. Some of them were raised here. Some of them were born here and moved away.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, like Halston, for example, was born in Iowa, but he grew up in Evansville.
Mm-hmm.
And he maintained a really strong connection to Evansville for his entire life.
Hmm.
Or somebody that Anna can talk about a little bit more, Wilhelmina Siegmiller.
Was originally a Canadian and made her home in Indianapolis.
What brought her here?
She was an educator, and she came to the United States for part of her professional training and then moved around to a couple different cities in the United States. Unfortunately, there's not a lot known about her, so this exhibition has been a great opportunity for us to dig in a little bit more to this interesting individual who was really a leader in art education in her time, and she was based right here in Indianapolis.
And what, she was a hands-on artist as well?
She did also make art, yes. So she made prints that were inspired by Japanese prints, which was a very popular thing to do at the time.
What's her ish? Turn of the last century?
Yeah,
or
she was early 20th century, so the 19-teens.
Mm-hmm.
And so she did printmaking, and then she incorporated those prints into her educational material. She wrote books to use in the classroom. She wrote books of poetry.
Wow.
And then she illustrated them herself. So she,
and we'd like to make Siegmiller a household name, yeah, by the time the show closes.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
When you were thinking about sort of diversity, were you also thinking about trying to be sort of equally representative of, like, have somebody from every decade of our 200 years or at least try to have the span of 200 years pretty well recognized.
Pretty much, yeah. The first gallery that you'll go into has sort of a timeline that divides the 200 years into five periods. And we did want to, you know, make sure that there were representative figures for each of those periods.
Aren't those periods named?
Yeah.
Tell me that. Tell me about that. Well, I'm intrigued.
We created some of the names. Some
sure.
of them are very obvious. But the first one is the frontier years. Indiana's Golden Age is the second one. And those are terms that are frequently used. Then we call the period from 1920 to 1959 through uncertain times. We've got the Depression and World War II.
Sure.
The turbulent 60s, you know, stand out. And then the last one that goes from 1970 to today we call the Road to Now.
Okay.
So each of those has a diversity of artists. We made a distinct effort to include women and African-American artists who are generally underrepresented, you know, in exhibitions. So, you know, that alongside with the diversity in the type of art that they made really sort of drove this project.
Right. I'm curious, this is kind of a big assumption here, but is there any commonality that you found in looking at all of these pieces? And you said, if I weren't from here, I would know that the state of Indiana had an influence on this artist, that artist, or the other artist.
We struggled with that a little bit. I mean, I think that the commonality is, and I'm still bowled over by this, is just the desire to be creative. It is there so strongly. And when we were thinking about, you know, 19 artists, because the state flag has 19 stars, we realized 19 is a hard number to sort of wrap your head around when you're one by one, you know, you're sort of marching these artists. So what we ended up doing was grouping them into five categories that sort of, in a way, celebrate a little bit of what, you know, we've come to call the Hoosier spirit. So we divide them into categories that are not chronological in any way, but pioneers and innovators, entrepreneurs, nature lovers, teachers and trainers, and visionaries and dreamers. And by doing that, you know, you'll get some artists like someone like Jacob Cox, who was pioneer artist.
He was literally a pioneer in that he was one of the first professional artists in Indiana when we were still a pioneering state in the 1830s and 40s.
And then we link, you know, in that gallery, we link him with somebody like Halston, who was definitely a big pioneer. So it just spans a big.
Wow. That, I love that because that, you know, fires new neurons for the visitors who are like, whoa, I would never think of those two in the same breath. But
right. Like is not with like in this show.
So, how fun. So, good for you.
Yeah. It's a good way to unite this great diversity of artists.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have all kinds of activities. I'm intrigued by the scavenger hunt that you've come up with. Tell me about that.
So we're doing an activity called Follow the Stars, based on, of course, these 19 stars. And obviously, we've pulled 19 of our favorite Indiana-related artists into this exhibition, but there's plenty of other art in the museum and around the campus that was also made by artists who were inspired by Indiana or had lived in Indiana or had some sort of connection to Indiana. And so we wanted to highlight those. And so we're creating an activity that encourages you to find these objects that are going to be marked around the campus or in the museum, especially, of course, in our American collection. And we are encouraging guests to find those. They'll be marked with a star. And you are encouraged to sort of snap a selfie with your favorite one.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
And there'll be maybe a place on your website where people can share their selfies down the road, maybe?
We're using a hashtag for social media
sharing. Sure, of course. Yeah.
Called IMA Follow the Stars.
Yeah.
And we're going to, I think the plan is to have also a screen in the entrance pavilion that rolls through a number of the selfies that people take so that you can see what guests in the museum are doing. And that way we can sort of see everybody following the stars on the IMA campus.
That's fun. Tell me about, you're also doing kind of crowdsourcing a landscape. What is this about?
It's called Inspired by Indiana. And in that gallery that's devoted to nature lovers, There is an activity space that's been designed by the educators at the museum, and there is sort of a linear drawing of a landscape, and then parents with their kids can start making a number of objects and then adding it to that landscape.
Aww.
So you can follow models and maybe make the state insect, which has just been made the state insect, the Say's firefly, or you make the state flower, the peony, or the state bird, which is the cardinal, and add it to the landscape. Or you can just be creative and make whatever you want and put it up there and also snap a selfie. And
detecting a theme here.
Yeah. Yes.
Accessibility is very important. So I have the feeling that in your roles as curators, that you can't really have favorites, because every new artist you look into, you probably fall in love with a little bit, because each one is fascinating. But do you have favorites as you went through and put this exhibition together?
I know I do.
All right. Tell us.
It's one of the last things in the exhibition, too, although a little bit's featured in the front. There's a printmaker named William Majors, who we're featuring in the Visionaries and Dreamers section. And he does these really beautiful etchings that have fantastic texture. They're abstract, but they really reward close looking, and you can sort of just get absorbed into admiring all of this beautiful, beautiful detail, this rich detail in these prints.
Contemporary? He's alive now?
He has passed away. He worked in the 60s, 70s mm-hmm. is sort of the peak of his career.
And how did he train? Because printmaking, you know, is still... I'm reflecting a little bit on your recently closed Gustav Bauman exhibition that printmaking is so specialized. Mm-hmm. And for somebody to have been doing it that recently, did he go to Japan or Germany?
Oh, no. He did a little bit of study abroad in Italy, but only for sort of inspirational factors. He was inspired mm-hmm. by religious art in Italy, even though he did more abstract work. He was inspired by many traditional elements. But he did study a little bit at the Heron School of Art here with another printmaker in our show, Gero Antresian, mm-hmm. who was a fantastic printmaker, and you'll see some of his work as well. But he ended up... William Majors ended up on the New York art scene in the end, and that's mm-hmm. where he did most of his printmaking.
Fun.
But he's an original Indianapolis native.
Local yeah. boy makes good.
Yes.
Annette, some of your favorites?
Well, I've always been a major David Smith fan. I mean, for 20th century sculpture, I mean, he broke so many of the barriers. And I learned a lot more about him as well, but I think the revelation for me was really George Rickey, whom I knew a little bit less about. And we have this wonderful piece in the show that he actually made when he was teaching on the art faculty at IU Bloomington. And it has a crazy long title called No Cybernetic Exit.
Yes, that was in some of your media materials. I wanted to understand that.
Yeah, and this was early in his career. He had trained as a painter, and so he came to making kinetic art later in life. And he befriended a faculty member who was a statistician in the economics department at IU Bloomington, who published all his papers on the bituminous coal industry and labor disputes.
Someone has to.
Someone has to, right. And so they must have befriended each other, and this professor asked Rickey to make a sculpture. So Rickey looked at all the papers that his friend had written and saw all these graphs and charts in the paper. And so this is sort of a three-dimensional version of some of those graphs and charts. So I think that was one thing we discovered in sort of digging around in the files.
There's a lesson in there. If you're an artist, don't just hang out with other artists.
That's right.
I think so. Yeah.
And, inspired by anything.
And exactly. Rickey certainly had an interest in math and science. He was kind of a numbers guy himself. So he gravitated that direction a little bit.
Sharon Gamble with the IMA's Dr. Annette Schlagenhoff, Curator of Special Projects, and Anna Stein, Curatorial Assistant. 19 Stars of Indiana opens May 15th and runs through January 8th. It includes paintings, prints, photographs, sculpture, fashion design, and other works from the IMA's permanent collection. 19 Stars is just one of the IMA's bicentennial celebrations. You can learn more at imamuseum.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. The largest group of artists under one roof in the Midwest will open their studios and present their work to visitors during the Raymond James Stutz Artist Open House. The open house is set to take place April 29th and 30th at the historic Stutz Business and Arts Center. And Travis DiNicola spoke with artists Mike Swolski and John Ross to find out more.
John, Mike, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you guys here.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Fun to be here.
Glad to have you, and I appreciate you coming in. I know you're both probably awfully busy right now getting ready for the open house, so appreciate the time. You've both been doing this a while. You've both been at the Stutz. Mike, how long have you been at the Stutz?
13 years.
13 years,
yeah,
John?
That's my 13th show.
19 years.
19 years.
Yeah.
It's a great place. It's
a great
building.
Yeah. You tend to move in and not move out.
Mm-hmm.
It's everything you need there. So
when you get a good space. And have you both been part of pretty much every open house since you've been there, or?
Yeah, for the 13 years I've been there, yes.
Yep.
It's fun. I mean, it's something to look forward to every year. The crowd that comes in is fun, and the building's great just to be there. And you know,
it's a great big party.
Right. Oh,
I mean,
let me tell you.
Tons of people come through. Do you actually sell some art that night? I mean, is it a good night for actually connecting with audiences?
Usually it's
John?
It's the big sales event of the year for most of us.
It really is.
Yeah.
So it's worth it for that.
Yeah. A lot of people buy. A lot of people want to buy, but then think about it and come back later. You get calls later, you know, months, sometimes years later.
Mm-hmm.
You saw something at the show. Do you still have it? Can you make it? So it's great.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. So let's talk about your work. Mike, let's start with you. What are you doing these days?
Been doing the same thing I've been doing for 45 years. That's metal art.
Metal art?
Yeah, well, metal wall art, indoors, not mm-hmm. particularly outdoors. And
not lawn art?
It just keeps, pardon?
Not lawn art?
No.
No.
Nothing
no,
like that.
No.
It rusts. I don't want my stuff to rust. It's pretty when I leave it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? No, the work has changed, of course, over the years. As you do more work, you change.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the new work that we have, the colors have changed a lot. Some of the designs have always just gravitated to different things. So you don't want to try to do new things all the time, yet you can't remember. You can't forget what you've been doing.
Sure. More sculptural or, I mean stuff that actually hangs on the wall?
You know, technically it's called 3D non-functional. It hangs on the wall. It doesn't do anything spectacularly
mm-hmm.
or anything like that. Yeah, it just kind of hangs there and smiles at you and you smile back at it.
I mean,
that's what it is. A lot of the things we're doing today are a lot of commercial buildings,
yeah.
A lot of residential by commission work only, you know. And then the shows that we do, this is the only show that I do a year.
Really?
Look forward to it every year,
mm-hmm.
and it's a lot of fun, a lot of preparation to get there.
Now, do you do all your metal work in the Stutz building,
oh,
in
absolutely.
Your studio there?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So you've got it all set up for that?
It's been set up. Mm-hmm. We used to have a big studio, made it a little bit smaller since we stopped doing gallery in the building.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great place to go. Get used to going to a workspace and doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Set up with torches and tanks and all the things that go on with the welding part.
Plan to do any demos that night at all with the
there,
torches?
Actually, there are, I think, 14 demos, John?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Saturday.
Yeah, why don't you talk about those?
Well, yeah, 14 artists will be doing demos in their studios of the art that they tend to make and that they like to make. So you can stop in and see the artist at work and ask questions, find out all about it. So
sure. And Saturday's a little bit tamer day, if you
yeah,
will.
It's much quieter Saturday.
Yeah, good for families.
Right,
and
yeah.
So, John, you've been working with wooden chainsaws, right?
Yeah, yeah. That, it's a new thing for me.
Tell me about that.
Started in October. I saw some work by a German, mainly a painter, a guy named George Baslitz, but he'd done a series of chainsaw carvings over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw some photos, and I loved them. They're just kind of a real primitive, crude figures.
Yeah.
So I thought I got to try this. So I got electric chainsaws and some logs and went to work. So,
needless to say, nobody goes near his studio when he's doing this.
You going to be doing any demos with a chainsaw?
I don't think so.
No. So what's it like working with a chainsaw? I mean, that just seems like such a big unwieldy tool.
Well, they have chainsaws with special carving bars that are shorter and a little bit lighter, so it's a little more manageable and used an electric chainsaw because it's inside, so you can't really use the gas.
Yeah.
So this isn't a traditional, you know, you make some art and then chop some logs for firewood later or with the same chainsaw.
You could. But no, I don't. But it's kind of fun. Yeah, the chainsaw is interesting. It's kind of, there's an element of danger to it, which I kind of like. It kind of engages you in the work, you know. Mm-hmm. You don't want your mind to drift when you're at the
no,
chainsaw.
I would imagine
going.
That.
So I like that. I like the physical side of it. It's work, and so you're moving around all the time, and it's an engineering challenge to kind of work out the things.
How big are the pieces that you're working on?
The tallest one is 72 inches. Mm-hmm. Most of the figures, they're all life-size figures.
They're all figures?
Yeah, all figures, mm-hmm. contemporary. Some are tabletop things, like 24 inches high. Some are full-length standing figures. So.
Now, you said this is new for you. So tell me about your other work from before. Will you be showing any of that as well? Or?
I studied sculpture at Heron and mm-hmm. did sculpture for a long time. And then I started doing painting 5-6 years ago. So I've got a lot of paintings that I show, too. And so it'll be a mixture of the two.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What, all figurative.
Like you were kind of joking, everyone stays away from his studio when he's got the chainsaw on. But, I mean, part of the great thing about the Stutz, I would imagine, for the artist there is that there is that sense of community. You can't go down the hall or whatever and check out another artist's studio, another space, and borrow equipment,
definitely.
Share ideas.
It's really the thing that keeps us going. I mean, you know, you're doing a piece of artwork, not sure. You're looking at it from your eyes. You'd like somebody else to take a look at it. So you go over and say, would you mind coming over and taking a look at my work, see what you think. Give me a little critique or something like that. And I think that our community gets together and does that a lot. We talk about art a lot, what's going on in our building. And, you know, it's important to have your peers looking at your work and vice mm-hmm. versa. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that's a real plus. Yeah. You're going to get a lot of good ideas. And it's really – I mean, you can do this stuff alone. You can do it at home in your studio at home. But
sure.
Have people around that share your ideas and can give you new ideas, and it's tremendous.
I put you on the spot here, but how many artists are at the Stutz now? Do you guys know?
It varies, but 65 to 80.
Yeah.
mm-hmm. Sometimes around there.
Sure.
I think they say it's 65 students.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, this year, there's some other cool stuff going on. I mean, there's always, for the opening, music. I know that there's also going to be a whole bunch of Turner Woodard's cars out on display, which
is
cool.
He has got a pile of cars.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he doesn't have them out all the time. Sometimes mm-hmm. they're in storage. They keep moving back and forth. He drives them every month, every single one of them. But there's got to be about 35 or 40.
Yeah,
they're
something
beautiful
like that.
Cars.
Yeah.
Just gorgeous cars.
Excellent.
Some are Stutz made right in the building.
Sure.
I think there's about 6 or 7 of them.
Mm-hmm.
The rest are just classic, wonderful old cars.
Yeah, you know? That's cool. I've seen a number of them, but it sounds like he's going to have a whole bunch on display this year. I think
he's going to all be out. As a mm-hmm. matter of fact, they gave a list of them. And so usually he parks them throughout the building.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun to do that, you know, to see that.
Yeah, that building's really developed over the years. I mean, both with, you know, I mean, having not just the artist spaces, but also there's a lot of businesses there. And then also you can get food, you can get drink, you can, you know, it's mm-hmm. it's its own community.
There's 6 or 7 production companies, movie production companies in the building.
Yeah. Wow.
There are people that do remotes, you know, like these racing car things. Mm-hmm. They go out and they do remotes with 15 or 20 cameras where they're catching all the turns and everything like that. There's some really good graphics designers and architectural firms. There's lawyers down there that have, you know, firms there that are good. And it's just a great building to be. It's just so energetic.
Now, the only mm-hmm. complaint that I know some people have is they get lost in the building.
Oh, yeah.
Especially on the big artist open house night, trying to figure out where everything is. So let's help our listeners. John, where are you located and what's an easy way to find you?
I'm in Building C, Suite 385.
So that's third floor?
Yeah, third floor. Mm-hmm. It's 385. We'll have security guards stationed throughout the hallways, and probably the best thing to ask them. And their maps will be passed out, too, but it's hard to describe. The Stutz is originally one building, and then they kept adding on as the mm-hmm. business grew, and it was 5 buildings tied together on some floors and not on some floors, so it's better just to ask
when
you get there. So
it's a little easy to get turned around. Mike, how about you? Where would we find you?
B355. So I'm just really across from John in another building.
Third floor,
look out
different
my back.
Building. You're, you're B, he's C.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
But you guys can see each other across the way?
Yeah.
Oh,
we can yell each other.
Pull a little can with some string between them. And,
it's not that far to walk, really.
Excellent. Good. So before I let you guys go, what's coming up next for you both? Mike?
About 5 weeks of R&R. Mm-hmm. You know, usually it's a push coming from the 1st of December all the way through the show.
Sure.
Just to get ready and to keep up with the other stuff that you're doing. I like to take a little time off in the summertime. So I think we're going to give that a little try.
Yeah.
John's going to laugh because he'll say, now you'll be back. But that's okay.
That's right. You will.
John, how about you?
I've got a lot of chainsaw figures I want to build. So I've got a list I want to get to work on that. And I've started building robots, like life-size robots out of plywood.
Really?
Sort of funky. Can't really explain. But anyway, I want to build some more of those and see where that goes. So.
But not with the chainsaw?
No, these are... I cut pieces of plywood and build them on a figure, and so we'll see.
Sounds good. Now, do you guys get a chance to – well, I guess you're always sort of walking around checking out other people's art, but you're pretty much stationed in your own studios the night of, right? So not a whole lot of chance to move around and check
not
stuff
hurting.
Out.
Not it's a large group in your studio on Friday night.
Yeah, pretty much continuous.
Saturday is a little bit slower time, but a lot of people that are there on Friday, as John said, they're looking.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they'll come back on Saturday to see if the piece is still there.
One thing I wanted to mention is one ticket is good for both days. Yes.
So you can go and check stuff out and kind of enjoy the party Friday night and maybe look a little closer on Saturday.
Did you know about the demonstrations they're doing?
Yeah, I mentioned the
demos. They're
going
to be really good. Plus for kids, there's a lot of stuff for them, too. I think there's also like a wine on canvas. There's a scavenger hunt for the kids. It's going to be so much fun on Saturday for the kids.
Excellent.
Friday's not a kid night.
Yeah, probably not. Maybe better to leave the kids at home on Friday, bring them back on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sounds like a plan. Gentlemen, thank you both for coming in to Art of the Matter. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Travis DiNicola with artist Mike Swolski and John Ross. They are two of the many artists you will see at this year's Raymond James Stutz Artist Open House, which takes place on April 29th and 30th. New this year is the Grand Tour of Artisan Autos, which is the opportunity to see and learn about the 28 vintage and collectible cars owned by Turner Woodard, which are on display in this former Stutz Motor Car Factory during the open house. $12 advance sale tickets are available at select Old National Bank locations, the Stutz Business and Art Center office at 1060 North Capitol Avenue, C310, and at stutzartists.com. That's S-T-U-T-Z, artists.com. Tickets are $15 at the door. Children 12 and under are free. Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
Some of our listeners are going to see one or even both of us over the next couple of Saturday nights, aren't they?
That's true. We've got some big events coming up.
We have some big events at our other jobs.
What?
Alphabet Affair, sponsored by the letter R this Saturday night.
Yes, that is Saturday night. And then you've got a big event for Landmarks coming up.
Rescue party, Saturday night,
R
the
30th.
For yeah, R for Risk.
Oh, look at that. We're both doing Rs.
Indeed. But we have some other events you probably want to check into as well on our calendar that we call What'll We Do
When We're Not Running Events
right?
for other organizations. Hey, you might want to check out Beef and Boards if you haven't been up there in a while. They do a great job with their dinner theater, and Guys and Dolls is going on up there right now, which is just such a fun show. So, you know, take a roll of the dice with that one. And they've got a great cast for this, including Eddie Curry, always a great favorite. And it's just such a fun classic musical based on the short stories of Damon Runyon, and Beef and Boards will do a great job with it. And, of course, you can enjoy Chef Odell Ward's freshly prepared dinner buffet and select beverages, and parking's always free. Sounds like a good weekend. Sounds like it's worth going up. Check out beefandboards.com. It is running now, and it runs through May 15th up at Beef and Boards.
Well, I didn't cook, but I did student direct Guys and Dolls when I was in high school. Yes,
yeah.
Yep. Great. Cool. Lots of great. You will be coming out whistling or humming those tunes.
How can you not?
Very memorable music. On another stage in town at the Phoenix Theater, the world premiere of Leyenda, which is a reinterpretation of traditional Hispanic and Latino legends, but told through contemporary people's stories. This was put together by Brian Fonseca, the Phoenix's founder, with some help from their playwright in residence, Tom Horan. Put together through interviews with a lot of members of Indianapolis Latino community. And by the way, this is the annual bilingual production, so check to make sure whether the performance you're thinking of attending is in English or Spanish, depending on what your desire is, and act accordingly. Go to phoenixtheater.org to learn more about Leyenda and hear some legends reinterpreted for modern times.
You may remember the interview I did with Angela Jackson Brown a few weeks ago about her play Anna's Wings that was part of the Diva Fest at the Fringe. Well, it has done so well that they have held it over past the Diva Fest.
Great.
And are going to continue to perform it this weekend with two additional shows on Saturday, the 23rd, and Sunday, the 24th. Both showtimes are at 6 p.m. at the Indiana Fringe. If you did not get a chance to check out Anna's Wings, you can do so this weekend at Indie Fringe.
Say, we're starting to, as you've probably noticed, college graduations seem to be getting earlier every year, so you may have some people to shop for who are getting ready to graduate college, university, and if they're in Indiana, here is a gift idea for you, for anybody either from here or who's made a significant portion of his or her life in Indiana, including college or graduate school. Think about getting them a copy of Mapping Indiana, Five Centuries of Treasures from the Indiana Historical Society. By the way, when you do that, send them the link to the podcast of Travis's wonderful interview with the creators of that book.
Hey,
and maybe even take them by the hand to see the exhibit at the Indiana History Center. You can find out a lot more online. Just Google Mapping Indiana, Indiana Historical Society, or some combination of those terms, and you'll get lots more information.
Sharon, you may think that I am out of my gourd.
Gourd art, I saw this.
Yes, May 6th and 7th, it's the 24th Annual Indiana Gourd Society State Show, Fairies in the Gourd Patch at the Boone County Fairgrounds in Lebanon. It will be a gorgeous show.
No, they did not write that.
Yes, all types of gourds, all types of things you can do with gourds. You know, you can draw, you can paint, there's calligraphy, you can cut, you can engrave, you can mold, you can weave, you can do faux finishes. There's going to be all sorts of designs.
You can make a percussion instrument?
You could. They're going to be featuring Native American, Western, African, Oriental, modern, holiday designs, all sorts of things. There's going to be competitions and workshops and vendors and auctions and raffles and how-to. And, oh, my goodness, there's so much to do at the annual Gourd Show. Again, that's going to be May 6th and 7th, so get your gourd ready, Sharon. Get more information at IndianaGourdSociety.org.
Isn't there something with race cards and gourd? Oh, no, that's Gordon. Never mind.
You can carve out a gourd that looks like Jeff Gordon.
Jeff Gordon. There we go.
See, there you go, Sharon.
Oh, there's a specialized. Okay. Mm-hmm. Dear listeners, if one of you does that, please send us a photo at artofthematter@wfyi.org. We want to see that. Don't forget that Central Indiana Community Foundation is creating a legacy for the future. Well, how do you do that? How do you create the past for the future? Well, they've taken a page from Ben Franklin, who shortly before his death in 1790 set aside some monies for the cities of Boston and Philadelphia, but specified that the funds were to be used for public works and invested and untouched for 200 years before being accessed. CICF's plan is a little bit different, same principle, except they're allowing 100 years before these funds will be accessed. And there are two Ben Franklin funds. One comprises 1,000 donors giving $100 each, and the other is 100 donors giving $1,000 each. Each fund will be invested in CICF's endowment investment pool and, again, won't be accessed until 2116. And there'll be a lot of conversations with donors and other people who live here today about what do you think our city is going to be like in 100 years? What do you think we'll need? And what would you like to see happen? You can learn much more about that at CICF.org.
Sharon, you mentioned Benjamin Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Indiana Historical Society Press is proud to announce that one of their books has just won the 2016 Benjamin Franklin Book Award that is given by the Independent Book Publishers Association. And the book is The Quiet Hero, A Life of Ryan White, and by Nelson Price, our good friend Nelson Price.
Yeah.
Yes. And so it is a gold medalist for this award, and that is a very, very cool thing. So congratulations to Nelson, and congratulations to the Historical Society for publishing this book that looks at of Ryan White and also the courage that his mother, Jeannie, showed as well during all the ordeals that they had to go through when he was diagnosed with AIDS. And so this is a great book about that story. And congratulations to them for winning the award.
Fantastic. Hey, there's an event coming up on April 30th that I sadly can't go to because I'll be at my own place at Indiana Landmark Center with a rescue party. However, if I were available, I would so be attending Evening in Paris, April 30th at Ivy Tech Community College and Culinary Center. That's right here in the center of town, not far from WFYI, at 6:30 in the evening. Now, don't just show up. You need to buy your ticket ahead of time. It is a French-inspired evening of food and beverage, including a cocktail reception and gala dinner. Savor French delicacies and iconic recipes while supporting the program that launched them. And specifically, you may remember our conversation a few weeks ago with Ivy Tech. This funds mm-hmm. scholarships to allow students to study culinary arts abroad for a few weeks, which has launched a number of careers over the history of Ivy Tech's culinary program. So an evening in Paris, April 30th, coming up soon.
Speaking of April 30th, it is also Independent Bookstore Day, and Book Mamas in Irvington is celebrating that day with a whole bunch of events from 11 to 3 p.m., including authors Sherry Wood Emmons, Julie Young, Kurt Meyer, and Robert Snow, all there from noon to 3. Other activities include an adult coloring table and sidewalk chalk and a Humane Society visiting dog and a special sale and all types of fun stuff. So it's a great way to celebrate Independent Bookstore Day out at Book Mamas in Irvington, and that is, again, on April 30th, Independent Bookstore Day.
Travis, how do you feel about hostas?
I don't feel hostile to them.
Excellent. They like you very much, especially if you have some shade to accommodate many of them. Now, there's an old wives' tale that all hostas love shade. There are actually some hostas that prefer to be out in the sun. Whoa, did I just blow your mind about hostas?
Yes,
well, you can
did.
Learn so much more at the Indianapolis Hosta Society Garden Tour. So here's the deal. There's a society for everything, and there are local tours and national tours. Well, the National Hosta Society is going to be coming soon. Actually, in 2017, the International Hosta Convention will be hosted by Indianapolis. So, International Hosta people
Hostas
here.
And gourds.
Speaking about hostas in Dutch and Italian and Spanish. Shocking, right?
Wow.
But the local Indianapolis Hosta Society said, hey, let's do a trial run. Let's do a little tour. It's coming up June 11th and 12th. I'm telling you about it a little bit early because, as we know, those summer weekends fill up very quickly.
And it takes a while to grow your hostas.
And it takes a while to grow your hostas, yeah. So go to IndianapolisHostasSociety.org to learn more and get tickets.
And you can always learn more about local arts events at IndieArts.org/guide, the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide website, or listen to us next weekend on
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Like the IMA, the Indiana Historical Society is celebrating our bicentennial in multiple ways. Sharon Gamble invited guest curator Rachel Berenson-Perry and exhibitions director Eloise Batik to tell us about the Indiana Impressionists, the art of T.C. Steele. In addition to being a Hoosier art authority, Rachel is a T.C. Steele specialist and wrote a new essay about Steele's influential second wife, Selma Neubacher Steele, published as part of a deluxe 50th anniversary IHS edition of The House of the Singing Winds, The Life and Work of T.C. Steele.
So, Rachel, I'm taking full advantage of the opportunity of having you in the studio to remind us about T.C. Steele's position in Indiana and then in the art world beyond.
T.C. Steele, who was born in 1847 and lived to 1926, broke ground in Indiana. He studied abroad at the Royal Academy in Munich and then made the unusual choice to return to his home territory to paint what he knew best, which were the landscape of Indiana.
And remind us why that was an unusual choice around, it would have been around the time of...
The turn of the last century, yes. Well, most artists who were serious about their careers would have gone to the Eastern Seaboard where the major exhibitions were taking place at the National Academy of Design and also in Pennsylvania. And if you weren't seen and networking, as they would have said now.
Sure.
With the people on the East Coast, you just weren't going to be as well known. And even though Steele, along with other members of what became known as the Hoosier Group, were having paintings accepted in the major exhibitions, they just their names just weren't as known because they weren't hanging around with the art crowd in New York.
And also, and I think we sometimes forget this aspect, not that Steele and his cohorts couldn't still be purchased by collectors from, say, the East Coast or beyond, but they had to cultivate collectors here at home too, right?
Absolutely. The landscape really wasn't something that people purchased in the early 1900s. Steele, all of his life, always made his living from painting commissioned portraits, and the landscapes were something that he really enjoyed doing but didn't necessarily keep body and soul together.
Mm-hmm.
So he did a lot to promote landscapes in the home. And then also the timing was good for people who were, during the industrial age, were getting a little nostalgic for bucolic scenery.
Which we had in great plenitude.
Right. We're more willing to purchase landscapes.
So you would maybe come home from your job with high-tech machinery around you, and you could rest your eyes on something beautiful and
handmade.
And pastoral.
Right.
And handmade, yeah.
Yes.
Mm. Eloise, tell us about why the Indiana Historical Society has this exhibition.
Well, we are honored to include the artwork and the story of T.C. Steele as a part of our bicentennial offerings throughout the year of 2016. So throughout the calendar year, when we celebrate the bicentennial, we're looking at celebrating stories that really do illuminate the Hoosier spirit from a variety of different angles. Mm-hmm. So we have exhibitions that are celebrating features from our collection, that are telling stories of communities both here in Indianapolis and far beyond that are really looking at how Hoosiers have successfully depicted and risen to the best of our abilities, the stories that have chronicled the last 200 years. So T.C. Steele fits well into that framework in terms of being one of our most successful artists throughout our state's history, but then also in his work to capture the landscape of Indiana. Mm-hmm. So it's not only his story as a favorite son, but also his ability to really capture for future audiences what the landscape of the state has looked like at its most beautiful. So it's sort of a perfect match for us. Mm-hmm. It's a great story. It's beautiful visuals. It celebrates some of the very best spots in the state in terms of the beauty that they provide, and just really works well with the rest of the stories that we're celebrating throughout this bicentennial year.
You mentioned before we turned the microphones on that when you first came to the Historical Society in the 90s, they were talking about the bicentennial exhibit, and everybody was like, oh, that's so far in the
future. It's in the future. We'll have cars that fly. And, yes.
And here we are.
Yes, and here we are. And, you know, it's such a great opportunity to look back at so many eras of our history. And mm-hmm. T.C. Steele is so beautifully anchored in a period and in an artistic movement that many people will not be aware of in terms of that existence in our state. Mm-hmm. So we're very excited to celebrate the breadth of talent that has existed throughout our history.
And I might add that this also is in collaboration or kind of in conjunction with a really special edition of The House of the Singing Winds, which is a book that was published originally in 1966 at the Historical Society and reprinted mm-hmm. in the 90s. And this book will be quite unique in the fact that it's more of a coffee table book. It will have 75 full-color images of T.C. Steele paintings, and then also has a wonderful foreword that is the biography of Selma Neubacher Steele, who was Steele's second wife and the author of the original House of the Singing Winds.
And you, in conjunction with guest curating this exhibition, did some writing, did that
right.
biography.
Right, and also identified the paintings to be included.
Right. So tell us about those twin stories, because Selma was her own person,
definitely.
I gather, and had some opinions. And
right. And she's often overlooked
for
her contribution to Steele's legacy and also making it possible, really, for him to follow his muse. And I've always really admired Selma Steele. And when the idea came up to reprint the book, and I was talking to John Herbst and Ray Boomhauer about doing this essay, they wanted me to write an essay about T.C. Steele. And I said, wow, you know, I'd really like to write an essay about Selma Steele, because she, as many artists' wives, is one of the overlooked factions of his career. And she was very, very independent and strong-willed. And in this wonderful book, The House of the Singing Wind, she talks about coming to Brown County in 1907 and the trials and tribulations of settling there and managing their lives there while the artist wandered around and painted.
She made it possible. She took care of, she kept the home fires burning, literally and figuratively.
Right. And then she also saw a lot of things in Brown County, which was a very rural area, that she wanted to improve. She wanted to improve the roads and the education and the health and many of the things that we talk about today, even in rural areas. But she was not well liked by the natives because she came in with such strong opinions and she was looked upon as being an outsider who was meddling in their lives.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
So it took even more strength of character to persist.
Exactly.
Did she help her husband select clients or kind of encourage him to preserve some time to paint those landscapes that were maybe not at the time feeding anything but his soul in the moment? Did she kind of push him to do what he loved?
No, that's a common misconception.
Really?
A lot of current collectors like to repeat.
Oh, it's a nice romantic story.
Well, I don't think that she pushed him to do anything. I think he was absolutely passionate about painting the landscape and did it whenever he had a chance. He'd had to steal the time from his portrait painting to do this, but I would not say that she ever pushed him to do anything.
Tell us about so some of these paintings have not been exhibited before.
That's correct. All of the paintings that are in this exhibition are borrowed from private collectors.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of them haven't been seen by the public at all or very infrequently. They haven't been in exhibits. Some of them have been, but a lot of them have not.
What are some of your favorite finds that are included in this exhibition? They're all your children are beautiful, right?
Right.
It's hard to choose.
I think one in particular is it's called Fording the it may be Fording the Muscatatuck. It's a painting that was painted at the same time as Steele's prize-winning painting called The Bloom of the Grape. And it has a similar sensibility. I like his paintings that are kind of foggy and moody and maybe not as cheerful as some of his fall paintings in particular. So, and there's another painting of a carriage in Indianapolis in the very early 1900s or late 1800s that's kind of in a foggy, rainy day that I particularly like.
Fun.
Yeah.
And Eloise, I know you're also partnering with Storytelling Arts for an unusual event.
We are. We're excited to have Storytelling Arts, who we've worked with for years, at the History Center on Friday, April 29th for a storytelling program. that will really celebrate the story of T.C. Steele. So when you combine the exhibits and the storytelling program and the book, I really feel very proud that we're able to celebrate his work and his life through so many different avenues.
What's your favorite aspect of the whole Steele exhibit and your programming?
Sure. I think that this exhibition is a really wonderful counterpart to some of the other exhibits that we have at the History Center. So as you know, we're very active in our You Are There exhibit series, uh-huh. where we recreate historic photographs as dimensional environments for you to step inside of and interact with actors playing historical characters in the space. So that's such a dimensional and hands-on experience. And I really think this is a wonderful opportunity for us to showcase artwork and the ways that artists have contributed to the storytelling of the history of the state, but provide such a different medium in terms of a way to convey those messages. So it really sort of completes a menu for us, so that for visitors to the History Center, there's a wide variety of ways that you can engage with the evidence of history and with the various ways that people have left a mark on the state.
Sharon Gamble with the Indiana Historical Society's guest curator, Rachel Berenson Perry, and exhibitions director, Eloise Batek. You can see Indiana Impressions, the Art of T.C. Steele, at the Indiana History Center through July 9th. Find out more at indianahistory.org. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m. I'll check out the Virginia Avenue Folk Festival.
I'll chat with Janet Allen and David Hochoy about their long careers in the arts in Indy.
And I'll dig deep into the Grand Canyon exhibit at the Eiteljorg, and we'll have that arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.